Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
The inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with her blood, and I saw her sit upon the hairy beast, and she held forth a golden chalice, full of the filthiness of her fornications. And upon her forehead was written, "Behold, I am the great mother of harlots and all abominations of the earth."
Downtown Toronto headquarters is episode 75, Howling 2. I was a teenage werewolf. What's the subtitle?
Your sister is a werewolf.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and also called Sturba, Bitch of the Werewolves in some markets. So, I mean, this is a interesting film in the sense that this is a sequel to the Joe Dante classic, The Howling. This was not helmed by Joe Dante. I don't even remember the name of the director. But, I mean, there's a very tenuous connection to the first one, which I'll talk about in a moment. But this film, I mean, this film is maligned. I mean, this is up there with, you know, it's considered to be one of the quote-unquote bad movies. I feel it's unfairly maligned. I think it's really entertaining. I think if it wasn't Howling 2, but some sort of just, like, random werewolf flick, it would get a lot more love. But, I mean, yeah, it's definitely an interesting, no pun intended, beast. I mean, we've got actors like Sybil Danning, the great Reb Brown, who we've talked about many times on the podcast, and of course, the inimitable Sir Christopher Lee. And we got a great theme song, too. Mm-hmm. In the pale, pale light of the moon.
With guitar and drums and
Howling. Howling. I mean, you know, as far as a great theme song, but a little bit. They really went to the well a few many times with that song. It's about six times, seven
and
times.
And speaking of going to the well many times, well, we'll talk about the closing credits, too.
One of the most epic closing credits in the history of cinema. Hilariously enough, this band that sang that theme song, it's Stephen Parsons fronted.
Not to be confused with Homer Simpson's favorite band, the Alan Parsons Project. This is Steve Parsons.
Yeah. Band fronted Babel, right? Yeah. And they seem to be to the jet from like Los Angeles to Czechoslovakia to the den of Sturba, Queen of the Werewolves, wherever they need to be to sing.
In the pale light of the moon.
Howling. So I mean, this movie begins with a pretentious Christopher Lee narration. I love the man. I adore the man. You know, I have him tattooed on my shoulder, but you know, he's saying lines like, you know, of course, foreshadowing Sturba, the mother of harlots and all abominations of the earth.
Filthy fornication, the great mother of the harlots. I hope I'm doing him justice, my namesake. Chris there. Reading from the book, and he lends a definite air of gravitas and class that is promptly, I don't know, removed by Reb Brown.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, first of all, this is a reunion, because this is a reunion of Captain America 2, Death Too Soon, where Reb Brown played Captain America and Christopher Lee played Miguel, you know.
Let's say Lee was more credible as a Miguel, but I think Red Brown has ever been in any role. He's a sort of a corn cob, and here he's the, kind of the same. But
yeah, he is.
We've gone to town on this guy. And our first podcast was Yore, where he's
traipsing around in a loincloth and a Joan Rivers wig in a prehistoric. I mean, no matter where he sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and also Strike Commando as the I guess the heroic Mike Ransom doing battle, tête-à-tête battle with the formidable Russian adversary, Jakota!
Yeah. The Red Brown, I mean, we love him, but I mean, not the most dynamic
versatile
of actors.
Thespian.
I mean, he's the man could not appear more bored, you know? I mean, at one
and
point...
more corny, too.
At one point, near the end of the movie, when Christopher Lee is showing the weapons that they're going to use to attack Sturba, and one of the weapons happens to be a callus,
a chalice,
which holds the sacred blood of Christ.
Yes, now, this is a chalice that holds the sacred blood of Christ. And then Red Brown comes back with, wow, you know, like, wow.
No, not even wow, he's just kind of like, oh, okay.
That's a neat weapon.
like you would think, the blood of Christ, dude? Like, that's fucking awesome, man. Just like, okay, whatever. But anyway, yeah, so talking about the tenuous connection of the Howling 2, there have been many Howling sequels. Now, before I even get into this again, I have to say, one more time, the original Howling was directed by Joe Dante, and it was a wonderful movie. It was brilliant. When Christopher Lee acted in Joe Dante's Gremlins 2, when he first met Dante on the set, he actually went up to him and apologized for appearing in Howling 2.
Oh, wow.
Your sister is a werewolf. So, where do we get this, your sister is a werewolf? Well, at the end of Howling, the character of Karen White, which was played by Dee Wallace, turned into a werewolf on air. And Reb Brown plays her brother, i.e. your sister is a werewolf. Mm-hmm. He's at the funeral of Karen White, who is no longer being played by Dee Wallace. I mean, there's nobody from Howling who's in this movie. And she's being buried, but because of the fact that they removed the silver bullets from her, she will not remain dead and buried.
Yeah.
So Christopher Lee, who plays sort of like a occult investigator by the name of Stefan Krosko, is trying to convince Reb Brown that his sister's a werewolf. And Reb Brown basically tells him, this is a quote
this
from the
is an
movie.
Affront. Yeah, like, I will not let you do that. I'm going to, you know,
and
you
he just
want
goes,
to kill him.
Why don't you just get the hell out of here? But he doesn't even say with any sort of, like, I had more emotion than him. He's like, well, why don't you just get the hell out of here? And anyway, but he does become a werewolf in the casket, and Christopher Lee, you know, sticks a dagger through her heart.
Yeah.
And now she can now rest in peace. Inexplicably, there's a scene where they then go to this rock and roll club, this punk new wave club, where we got our band Babel playing, and Christopher Lee is not allowed. You know, if you go to a fancy restaurant, they say, okay, you can't go in if you're
wearing
gotta
a suit. You got to wear a suit jacket. Well, dress yourself up.
Yeah.
Well, in order to pass off the septuagenarian English, actor just oozing with decorum and gravitas, you're going to fit right in with these punksters by wearing like these white sunglasses.
Yeah, they give a pair of white sunglasses to put on. I don't even know how to describe like 80s wraparound sort of like asymmetrical 80s sunglasses. And he puts them on. He's looking resplendent all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, he's wearing, you know, a nice red shirt. And I mean, you know, he looks... That's the thing about Christopher Lee. I mean, the guy, he brings dignity to everything he does. It doesn't matter how ridiculous the movie, how ridiculous the scene. I've seen this man. I mean, he's been in hundreds of movies. I've seen him in some of the most ridiculous situations. He's always got some class.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very rare quality to have.
Mm-hmm. This is a werewolf, wolf-themed nightclub. I forget what it's called, but they have a wolf on the door. And, you know, again, the wolf theme is an interesting one. Like, lycanthropy's really, you know, we've talked about it, I think, on other podcasts, you know, your transition, and, you know, it's whether it be, I don't know, a metaphor for
Puberty,
or you know, a transition from what they always say, you know, if you behave badly, you behave like an animal, your beastly nature comes out, and so that's, you know, that's the theme here. And he's, what's he doing in this club again?
No, to be honest, it was a tangent. Because there was this woman who this very attractive black lady.
Oh yes, Mariana.
And she basically was sort of like the envoy of Sturba, the Queen of the Werewolves. Yes. And she was there in the club trying to lure some punkers to this like abandoned warehouse where they were going to get,
fed upon. Yeah.
And we got to say, this movie has a lot of breasts. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tits in this movie. And when she lures these punkers to this warehouse before she transforms
werewolves into a werewolf, to a warehouse.
She shows her boobs, you know, the first of many.
Yeah.
And Lee is following, and there's some, you know, there's a showdown.
And they have these two punkers, I guess, don't come off very well.
No.
One guy gets slammed in the back of the head, and the other two go down real quick at the hands of the envoy of Sturba.
Sturba. You almost sound like Christopher, not Christopher, so Sean Connery when he said that. No. Say that again,
man. Finding Forrest.
I love your Sean Connery person. That's why I gotta have you say it every time. But,
it's disturbing.
But, but anyway, Stefan or Christopher Lee, he's like the Van Helsing to Sturba's Dracula, okay? She is the queen of the werewolves, and she is housed in the old country, that being Czechoslovakia. Not Transylvania, but Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. Pretty much next door.
Yeah, and then so somehow they've convinced Reb Brown's character and also this reporter lady that his sister was a werewolf, so she's going to accompany them to Czechoslovakia and hunt down Sturba. And then we're treated to this amazing scene, which is Sturba's lair, which to me was like a cross between Eyes Wide Shut and Quest for Fire.
Yeah.
It was like this insane like lair filled with naked people wearing very unflattering outfits, you know, prehistoric. And there's this like this old woman standing there, and they bring in what I assume to be a virgin to be sacrificed.
Or maybe a pregnant woman. I don't remember.
Anyway,
she was dressed in flowing white, and anyway, yeah, she was to be sacrificed.
So. And Sturba. leans into her and sucks out her essence, which is this really unconvincing green, fluorescent, whatever.
It reminded me of Prince of Darkness a little bit, which I just recently saw. Yeah,
and again, then all of a sudden, instead of this old haggard lady, we see the statuesque form of one Sybil Danning, and I mean,
you had the pleasure of talking to the past weekend.
I did, yes, and this was Sybil Danning in 1985. I mean, this woman defines the term Amazonian. I mean, geez, man, like, you know, tall, buxom, curvaceous in all the right places, you know. Now, this movie, I mean, if you have a fetish for hairy women, you know, hey, man. Whatever floats your boat. This is the movie for you, because there are a lot of scenes of, you know, women becoming very hirsute and engaging in sexual activity.
That's love, hairy lovemaking. It reminded me of maybe like Cats or something, you know, memories all alone in them. like the effects were bad in this thing, right? And
well, Sybil Danning told me that when they're in Czechoslovakia and they're getting the costumes flown in from Hollywood, they're ape costumes, monkey costumes.
Yeah.
So the filmmakers are trying to make a monkey out of them, the Hollywood execs.
And this is like howlingly bad, because you associate, I mean, lycanthropy, werewolves, they're strong, they're incredibly tough. They're more wolves, at least in the previous incarnation of howling, than they are men.
Mm-hmm.
And you take like a timber wolf, it's this giant wolf that can easily like kill a pit bull, and so they're fearsome. These things look like the Planet of the Apes.
No, at one point near the end
like
of the movie,
Yeti or something.
Reb Brown is running around the trips around the desert in his Canadian tuxedo, which we've talked about before, which is basically denim head to toe, denim jacket, and
denim jeans. Yeah, the Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah, and he's being chased by what looked like a whole bunch of Chewbaccas.
Yeah. and you never got the impression that they could, track down a moose or a deer. Like, wolves are super fast. They're super strong. Apex predator.
You got it.
These things are just ridiculous. Yeah, Yeti, like, traipsing through the Carpathian Mountains or whatever.
But the queen of the werewolves, Sturba, you know, she's watching one of her minions, who's a complete doppelganger for Jimmy Smits, right?
Yeah.
And he's making love with that attractive black lady that we saw earlier, and Sybil Danning rips off her shirt, her boobs come out. Now this is going to come into play much later on, but anyway. And she starts like developing hair all over her body, and she's watching these two make love, these two hirsute people, and then a hirsute Sybil Danning joins in, and it's literally like this
furry Fur Fest,
Orgy, and, you know, I don't know, is it too soon? Is it not too soon? the Jimmy Smiths look alike? He doesn't look like a werewolf. He just looks like Robin Williams, you know?
Well, for all the orgies in this movie, there's like nothing sexual about this at all. No. With the exception of like Sybil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this movie, the plot is thin. So, I mean, this whole town is basically, they're all affected by the curse, you know, the lycanthropy. And at one point...
They look like, you know, extras from a Fellini film. Like, it looks like the extras from Borat or something. Like, this town is just, like, full of, like, dwarfs and, you know, and, like, giant noses and, like, you know, hunchbacks. And it's unbelievable. Mm. And they really, like, this, you know, we've both had the pleasure, you know, of... traveling through the Czech Republic, mm-hmm. and it's just a beautiful backdrop to a movie, and it's just gorgeous. And this, you know, they do in fact make use of this incredible country. Mm-hmm. You know, so if it weren't for again the terrible effects and whatnot, but but it has its moments here and there.
At one point, Reb and his companion come across a woman who was hit by a car, and it's so funny because the priest who said. I don't know, I mean, SCTV. SCTV was a sketch comedy show that was
produced
here in Canada.
Yeah, but it many legends.
Played over the world. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we had Eugene Levy on it, we had John Candy, we had Harold Ramis, we had Rick Moranis,
yeah,
we had
Andrew
Joe Flaherty.
Martin, yeah.
And there was these two characters put by John Candy, Eugene Levy, the Schmengi brothers.
Yeah.
And the Schmengi brothers were from...
They were from a made-up country, but they were meant to be, like, Ukrainians.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, they sent a send-up of Eastern Euro culture, basically, like cabbage rolls and coffee.
Cabbage rolls and coffee, yeah. And then they all play the accordion, and... I am your Schmengi, and this is my brother, you know, and... So this,
Stan Schmengi.
Yeah, so there's this Mrs. Vilvayachki with her cabbage rolls and coffee. So this... the way this priest announces that the woman was hit by a car is pure Schmengi brother. So, this woman was hit by a car. We must get her to doctor.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Cabbage rolls and coffee.
Good. Yeah. And then the townsfolk, you know, disappear, and, you know, Christopher Lee's Crossco character.
And that woman does turn to a werewolf.
Yes. He knows that there's something amiss, and he takes his, I guess it's a titanium stake.
Yeah.
Is it not? I think because that kills all werewolves, not just the... whatever, silver. Mm-hmm. I guess silver doesn't work
silver,
for all of them.
Man. Yeah, no, now we're going to the next level.
Yeah, I guess they've evolved.
Yeah. And also he's going against the queen of all werewolves again, mm-hmm. and this being Sturba.
Yeah, who wears this incredible getup. It's almost like piano keys in a way. Like it's this silver, she's wearing like thigh pads, and it's almost like Mad Max-esque.
It's Mad
so
Max
sexy.
Slash... Zardoz, slash the dominatrix of my dreams.
She's so smoking.
Yeah, when she's not covered in ginger hair, she's wow, a statuesque beauty for the ages. So I mean, this whole thing comes down to a battle between Reb trying to find his kidnapped traveling companion, and again, just reading lines like, I mean, like straight off a cue card, like so.
Yeah, uncommitted.
Yeah, and Christopher Lee going against Sturba. Hmm. And it's kind of basically runs the course the way you would expect.
Yeah.
However, I think it's fun. I think it's entertaining, man. Like, there's a lot of,
there's a kernel of a good movie in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not all inept. Like, they could have done so much more with it. So they have, the soundtrack is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Lee is incredible. The backdrop is incredible. The Czech Republic, Prague is such a stunning city. But then, you know, this... fell right off the turnip truck. This Reb Brown in another movie altogether, like just like fish out of water, you know. They check into a hotel at one point, and the ridiculous hunchbacked innkeeper says, "Room 666 for you," and he says, "I didn't see a sixth floor." Like, you know, So he's just, but I guess that is his character. He's a sheriff from Montana, and he's a fish out of water.
He's
just a big galoot.
Yeah, he's a
Rube.
No, like I said, whenever we see Reb Brown in a film, he seems so fucking out of place. He just sticks out. I don't care if you're playing the prehistoric warrior in Yore.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're playing, you know, Strike Commando, you know, Mike Ranson.
Yeah.
Whether you're in this one, whether you're Captain America, you don't fit in, man. He just never fits
in. And to his credit, look at the variety of these roles. Mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive.
But we love him. Like, we love Red Brown. In fact, we're going to dub every February from now on, Rebruary. Yeah. And we're going to celebrate the great career of Red Brown because we love
him. What can Red Brown do for you? To appropriate UPS's slogan? What can Brown do? Yeah, there's a certain...
Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi, yeah, like a cornball sort of charm to him.
Yeah.
And he has no acting ability. Like, by his own admission, he was a former cop and a bouncer, and someone discovered him and just said, hey, and he just takes anything and just runs with it.
And the man was probably in more Bruno Mattei movies than anybody else, which is also another another very interesting distinction, considering the fact that you think that Bruno Mattei is the best filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I have yet to see RoboWar.
Yeah, not even in the top three of his worst films.
Yeah. But Red Brown is in it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I can't say how he distinguished himself. It's disappeared from the memory banks, promptly. I think a week after I saw it.
I'd like to see Red Brown do Shakespeare.
Sure, why not?
Red Brown doing Hamlet?
Yeah.
Why not?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Prince of the Danes rather than, Prince of the... Joan Rivers, Maine.
To be, not to be.
Yeah, well, he suffered the slings and arrows of misfortune being in all those fucking Bruno Mattei movies. And I feel like I've been put upon by having sat through so many of them, but I can't imagine acting in so many of them. We digress.
But anyway, forgetting about Red Brown for a moment. This is worth seeing for a few reasons. It's worth seeing for the atmosphere, Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing.
Some kind of Italian horror elements,
Some melting faces, some really awesome soundtrack work, and some really gothic imagery.
It's worth seeing for the statue about Sybil Danning.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, watch the closing credits. We'll talk about it in a minute or two. And it's worth seeing for Christopher Lee. I mean, Christopher Lee is a man that, like, he always, as uncommitted as Red Brown is, that's how committed Christopher Lee is,
Yeah.
And he even said to Sybil Danning on set, this is what Sybil Danning related to me, the story. And if you listen to our Horrorama podcast, you'll hear her actually relate this story, where she felt kind of ridiculous wearing the fur. And Chris really said, Sybil, and they acted in 5 films together, so they knew each other well. Sybil, don't ever feel ridiculous, because if you take it seriously, the audience will take it seriously, and whatever you do, put your all into it. So she said that she never felt ridiculous, and she credits Christopher Lee for making her, giving her confidence in some of these roles that she took in later as her career progressed. Because no offense to Sybil Danning, I love her, but she's not much of an actress. To paraphrase David Brent from The Office, where he said Dolly Parton is more than a pair of tits.
Yeah.
So Danny's pretty much a pair of tits, So let's get to those tits.
Okay.
Let's get to the closing credits.
Yeah. How many times can you show her doff her top with cutaways to, I guess, Christopher Lee leering, to that other character leering, to the innkeeper, to the owl, like the bug eyes of the owl, sort of leering as well. And then they must have shown her ripping off her leather bustier at least, you said 30 times. 30 it must have been at least 20 to 30 times. And over and over.
And this is again to Babel for the 18th time singing, pale, pale light of the moon, howling. So... at the end of the day, I mean, this is a maligned film. I mean, people, it's up there in, some of the worst films ever made. It's entertaining. I think the association with Howling,
it's to its detriment. Yeah.
It being Howling 2 and really just being so tonally different, so bizarre, so campy, so weird. Fans basically just shout out this film from the second it came out. But it's entertaining. I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Yeah, probably the same for me, too.
Yeah?
Yeah. It suffers, obviously, in comparison to the original, which is so thoughtful and so incredible. And the effects as well. That was such a classic. And this thing, you just is so divorced from that reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just went right out of left field. Well, what did we learn?
But to its credit, I will say this is the only, because I don't know how many Howling sequels they've made. I mean, 7, 8, 9, I don't know. This is the only Howling sequel that actually has some sort of relation to the film that preceded it. It is tenuous, but at least they tried.
They tried, you know? Yeah.
One thing I learned is that if you're a editor or filmmaker, and if you have a bag of tricks you're disposable,
like handy wipes.
I.e. wipes, you know, to you know...
We were trying to describe how they did their cuts.
To go from one scene to the next.
Yeah, and it was, we saw, I think one was shaped like a diamond, yep. The other shaped like a comma, the other one was sort of a, like, 45-degree angle, yep. Just, you know, triangular wipe. They used every wipe.
There's about 30 different wipes possible. And again, that reminds me of SCTV, because there's this character played by Rick Moranis who's all into video. And he was always doing all this video stuff. This was in the 80s when video was... And he's like, yeah, I was doing all these star wipes and stuff. And all this crazy... And I mean, there's every fucking wipe you could possibly think of, you know? This is not Star Wars where they just have those cool horizontal wipes. Maybe vertical. Yeah. I mean, this was literally a kid with a camcorder for the first time playing with every setting.
Yeah.
So, good on them for utilizing those wipes.
I guess that's what we learned. That's one thing. Yeah. What I learned is, I guess you cited a Donald Sutherland, Julie Christie movie.
Mm-hmm. Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now, and you said that little people are kind of creepy.
Yep.
Well, in this one, there's, I guess, a little person who's wearing like a brooch, and Christopher Lee's character is trying to find out
what... And a really creepy clown mask, too.
Yeah, yeah. And where he got this thing
from. Kind
of
like a Punch and Judy mask.
Yeah. Yeah. And he follows this little person who ends up getting stabbed, but... Little people are, you know, a little bit creepy.
A little bit creepy, yeah.
Especially when they're masked.
Yep, yep. Those of you who have seen Don't Look Now, and you know what I'm talking about. Man, oh man, that ending.
Or Phantasm as well.
That's true. Like,
yeah. Maybe we should do a Little People podcast.
Hey man, I even find the Munchies in The Wizard of Oz a little scary.
Yeah, for sure.
And those fucking Oompa Loompas, oh my god. Mm. Okay, and again... We apologize to
I think that was about, like, they resembled wolves a little more than the wolves in this, werewolves in this.
Now, are you singing Games by Nuka's on the Block? Or are you singing, remember that?
Games. Oh, my God.
Stop playing those games. Thank you, TV. However, stop playing
it's a
those games.
Musical podcast here.
Totally, man. You know, we reference classical music. We reference hair metal. We reference boy bands. You know, we reference it all.
Yeah.
And I was going to, you know, stop playing those games, but don't stop listening to our podcast. Yeah.
Don't play games with my heart.
Little Backstreet Boys now.
Or is it stop? I don't know. Okay, now we're now. Now we're really going off.
Okay, let's get back to like the how in the pale
light of the moon,
howling.
Oh, I can't get that out of my head.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be singing that for next week and a half at least.
Another thing I learned was that well, we're on the subject. The demons had better werewolves than Howling. Howling 2. Yeah. And they weren't werewolves, they were demons.
Well, that's the thing.
Demoni, in, you know, Linkobo Returno, the demons
were
returned.
Were they demons? Were they werewolves? Were they zombies? Mm-hmm. That's still one for the ages, man.
There are the fingernails, the sloughing off of the teeth, which is apparently a Lamberto Bava
tradition.
Tradition, yeah, trademark, yeah.
Trademark, yep.
Mm-hmm. The effects for that on considerably, well, comparable budget, way superior to this thing. And this was the one that suffered, despite it having this amazing locale and tie to the first one, however tenuous.
Mm.
Pretty weak effects.
And if, for more Sybil Danny goodness, I can recommend more 1983's Hercules, starring Lou Ferrigno. That movie is, it's a canon film, and it's one for the ages, so, yeah.
No, we love our canon.
We love our canon, we love our Sybil, we love our Christopher, and we love our boobies. What more can you say, man?
Yeah, I don't know.
So for more, check out
www.reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, and terrific movie giveaways, and our podcast every weekend, for sure.
And we're part of the Crypt TV Network.
Yes, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.